Hey, Bible nerds, this is Dr. Manny Arango, and I'm your host for the Bible Department podcast powered by Arma. This podcast follows a Bible reading plan we created to help you read the entire Bible in a year. You can head to the show notes or thebibledepartment.com to download our reading plan and join the journey. Family, welcome to day 153. We are honestly embarking upon one of my favorite chapters of the entire Bible, which is 1 Samuel chapter 17. I love this passage so much. I have a tattoo of David killing Goliath on my arm, okay? I absolutely love this story. I love the story of David killing Goliath. It is an iconic story. It's a great story. If you're watching this, and if you're just listening via audio, then you did not just witness me pull up my shirt. But if you're watching the video, then you can see my amazing tattoo of David slaying Goliath. It's a good tattoo, and it's a good story. So, like always, if you've done the reading, I'm proud of you. Let's go. We're in 1 Samuel chapter 17, 18, 19, and 20, four chapters, action-packed chapters, so not hard to read. And if you haven't done the reading, yo, you're missing out. Go do the reading. Stop the audio. Stop the video. Go do the reading. So, very, very, very first thing that we got to do is we got to give context clues, okay? So, the first context clue is actually going to come from 1 Samuel chapter 13, verse 19. And it says this, "Now there was no blacksmith to be found in the whole land of Israel. For the Philistines had said, the Hebrews must not make swords or spears for themselves. So all Israel went down to the Philistines to sharpen their plowshares, mattocks, axes, and sickles. The charge was 2/3 of a shekel, the plowshares, and for mattocks, and 1/3 of a shekel for sharpening the axes and for setting goads. So on the day of the battle, okay, on the day of the battle, neither sword nor spear was to be found in the possession of any of the people with Saul and Jonathan, but Saul and his son Jonathan had them." Okay, right there. That's all the context that we need, that David grows up in a generation with no swords, no spears, no weapons, no blacksmiths. And so I would actually say the thing that's motivating David is not some vendetta against giants. I think so often when we preach or teach 1 Samuel chapter 17, we make it all about giants. But Goliath could have been normal height and he still would have died that day because David was adamant that he was going to win a sword for himself. So that's context, okay? Context. Let's like kind of keep kind of going into context. All these chapters, 17 to 20, is really going to highlight the conflict between David and King Saul. If you're Saul, you're happy that there's like this, you know, brave young man who's going to fight a giant that I don't want to fight, but not if you're Saul. David is immediately cast into the national platform and is going to get attention and fame and glory that Saul thinks he should have. And a narcissistic leader is never going to celebrate the wins of the people on their team. So Saul should be celebrating the fact that somebody stepped up to the plate and that there is a Israelite brave enough to fight Goliath, but he does not. Instead, he is going to see David as a rival. He's going to compete with David. He's going to attempt to kill David. And there's three people who are going to continue to save David's life, who are going to essentially be on David's team. And that's, ironically enough, two of these people are going to be Saul's kids. So Michal is going to be Saul's daughter, Jonathan, Saul's son, and then Samuel, who's the prophet to the king. So one of the characters that's going to get highlighted a ton in these four chapters is Jonathan. Okay. Jonathan is just a hero, guys. He is just, talk about a stand-up guy. And we'll get into him a little bit later. So let me round out all the context. Okay. So the context is David grows up in a generation with absolutely no swords. The context also is David has been privately anointed to be king. But there has not been a testing or confirmation. So he is anointed to actually be king. But remember, a couple of days ago, we talked about the threefold process of an Israelite king actually coming into power. So let's get into some nerdy nuggets, okay? Number one, the text is creating a deeply layered and complex character in David. I would actually say that David is probably the first truly gray character that we've encountered in the biblical text. there's a lot of characters who the text is showing us that they are good characters. Noah, Moses, Abraham, good characters who do some shady stuff here and there. Who, you know, good characters, but who fall into temptation. Good characters, but who are complex human beings. And so they end up doing things that are questionable, that are sinful, that aren't moral. And then we have David. And David doesn't just do stuff that's shady. David's kind of shady. David's the most complicated character that we've really encountered thus far. Even his motives for wanting to kill Goliath. On one hand, he's like, yeah, like, you come against me with the sword, spear, and javelin. I come against you in the name of the Lord God Almighty. So there's this one part of David's heart that wants to defend the honor of Yahweh. But then there's another part that's like, wait, the person who kills Goliath don't got to pay no taxes? Yeah, I'm not trying to pay no taxes. Let's go. Like, there's always the flip side to the coin with David. And we're going to see that from now all the way through 2 Samuel, that David's killing people on his deathbed. David is a complicated character. And I think that the text wants us to fight our urge to just make it neat and tie a bow on it. And the text wants us to fight our desire to resolve the conflict. There is conflict in the text on purpose. And I don't think it's there for us to resolve it. I think it's there so that we can sit in the tension and go, all right, like, how do I hold in tension the fact that this is a man after God's own heart, but this is a man who probably raped a woman and killed her husband, and not probably killed her husband, definitely killed her husband. There's debate around whether or not this is rape or whether or not this sexual experience between David and Bathsheba is consensual. So that's this. I'm going to throw that out there. We're going to keep coming back to that theme now that David has been introduced as a character. Next kind of nerdy nugget, okay? There is a person that should be fighting Goliath. His name is Saul. Okay, Saul is described as being head and shoulders above everyone else. He's taller than everybody. Okay, so if there is a person that really should be fighting Goliath, it is Saul. Number one, because he's king. Number two, because he's actually comparable height to Goliath, which then sets us up to go, yeah, Goliath is actually the easiest giant that David's ever going to face. The next giant that David has to face is Saul, who's going to throw spears at him, who's going to want to kill him. And Goliath is a relatively easy giant in comparison or in relation to the giant of Saul. Okay, next kind of nerdy nugget. Jonathan and Saul continue to be contrasted. So remember back in chapters 13, 14, Jonathan and his father Saul, or Saul and his son Jonathan, are contrasted. Well, that's going to continue in how they interact with David. So Jonathan is fully prepared to throw his support and his weight behind David as king. Jonathan cares more about the king being anointed by God than the king being himself. So let's think about it. Jonathan is the heir apparent to the throne. And Jonathan, through wisdom and discernment, knows that David is going to be the next king and wants David to be the next king. So we're going to get a little, you know, deeper in terms of chapter 18. And Jonathan is going to make a covenant with David. And this is radical. There's no way that an heir apparent should be making a covenant with the person who's actually going to take over as king. Like, that's just not normal. If anything, they should be rivals. They should be violent towards each other. And where Saul is violent towards David, Jonathan recognizes the spirit of the Lord on David and recognizes the call of God on David's life and will throw his support at David. So Jonathan and his father continue to be contrasted with each other. Jonathan is essentially giving David the kingship. So those are the three nerdy nuggets that will
that we'll really focus on. I'll maybe give you one more. So let's go to chapter 20 really quick. 1 Samuel chapter 20, verse 28 to 34. David is asked for permission. Jonathan and David have, you know, devised a plan to figure out what's going on with Saul and whether or not Saul's trying to kill him and whether or not the king's court is safe for David. And I want you to see verse 30 of chapter 20. It says, Saul's anger flared up at Jonathan and he said to him, "You son of a perverse and rebellious woman, don't I know that you have sided with the son of Jesse to your own shame, to the shame of the mother who bore you. As long as the son of Jesse lives on this earth, neither you nor your kingdom will be established. Now send someone to bring him to me, for he must die." Okay. The Hebrew language here is just insanely strong. Like, I mean, like Saul's cussing Jonathan out. Like this is strong to the level of profane. Like there's no way for me to overemphasize just how angry Saul is at this. I'm trying to think like what version. That's NIV. What does NRSV kind of say? Chapter 20, verse 30. Yeah, I mean, to the point that Saul almost kills his son, Jonathan. Like, this is just wild. Jonathan got up from the table in fierce anger. On that second day of the feast, he did not eat because he was grieved at his father's shameful treatment of David. Just Jonathan's moral compass is just absolutely incredible to me. All right, let's leave you with a timeless truth, okay? So the big context clue is 1 Samuel chapter 13. There's one more comparison. There's not just a comparison between Saul and Jonathan, but there's also a comparison going on between Saul and David. It's actually in chapter 16. I'll bring you there. Like briefly, I know that was yesterday's reading, but I think this is really, really important. So in 1 Samuel chapter 16, verses 1 through 13 are Samuel and David. And then chapters 14 and 23 are Saul and David. Okay. And there's some words here that are really, really important. So this is what God says to Samuel. It says, "See one of Jesse's sons." Okay. See, which is like see to it. So that word see should immediately bring us back to the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, that the serpent showed the woman the tree and said, "See, like it's good, like look upon it, it's good." Okay, so the nature of temptation is trusting my own eyes as opposed to trusting God's perspective. Okay? That's like the foundational nature of temptation. So, 1 Samuel chapter 16, verse 1, verse 7. There's a see/look theme going on, which culminates in verse 12 of chapter 16 with David being the smallest or the youngest, red with beautiful, beautiful eyes. Okay. And that's just like, man, that there's something about David that chooses to see things the way that God sees things instead of seeing things the way that he wants to see things. Now, this is going to come full circle when David later on in his life sees Bathsheba and has a moment of downfall, a defining moment of downfall. So just wanted to kind of point that out. The other thing that I think is really, really important that I feel like nobody ever points out is that David brings Goliath's head to Jerusalem. So there's a part of this decapitation that's good. David is portrayed as a serpent crusher. Now, the way that Goliath's armor is talked about, there's a Hebrew word used here called kaskasim, which is scaly. Okay, so Goliath's armor is described as being scaly, which means that Goliath is being depicted as a dragon, as a serpent, as a snake. And by hitting Goliath in the head with a stone, killing the snake in the head, and then decapitating that snake portrays David as the ultimate serpent crusher, the Messiah. But then he decapitates the head and he begins to do something that actually Yahweh forbids Jewish soldiers to do, which is to keep trophies. And the number one way that kings would keep trophies is they would decapitate another king and then take their head and make a chain out of it and wear the decapitated head to essentially, you know, intimidate anyone who was around. And some kings would have just a belt of just multiple heads of people they had killed or multiple heads. And there's actually tribes in South America who do the same thing, but they shrink the heads. Now, like, this is not something that Israelite soldiers are supposed to do. You're not supposed to be fighting for your own glory or to intimidate people. You're supposed to be fighting on behalf of Yahweh, who sees even fallen enemy soldiers as image bearers. And so, again, there's this tension. David's a great character. On one hand, he's the serpent crusher who's able to deal definitively with this serpent who's supposed to remind us of the serpent in Genesis 3. He's a Messiah figure. He's a prefigurement of the Messiah to come. But on the other hand, he's keeping decapitated heads as trophies. And this is no bueno. This is not good. But there's a complex character. That's as many nerdy nuggets as I got time to give you. As we move into a timeless truth, I want you to focus on the fact that David and Jonathan have now come into covenant with one another. And a covenant friendship is the opposite of two things. A covenant friendship is not a contract, and a covenant friendship is not convenient. Okay, so a covenant friendship is a very, very, very special thing. Jonathan really is the hero of this entire section, chapter 17 to chapter 20. And the covenant that he makes with David is completely countercultural and incredibly admirable. The text really does juxtapose Jonathan in his paranoid and wicked father. So if you're lucky enough to have any covenant friendships in your life, guard them with your heart. Guard them with everything you have, because covenant friendships are hard to come by. And we don't live in a society that really rewards or platforms or talks about covenant friendships. We live in a world of clout chasing, and people will be your friend because they think that there's something they can get out of it for themselves. But genuine covenant friendship is a beautiful thing when it can be pulled off. And Jonathan and David have that. And man, I think it should be the model, especially for male-to-male relationships. We need more covenant relationships. All right. Tomorrow, we got day 154, and we are in 1 Samuel chapter 21 to 24. We got 21, 22, 23, 24, four more chapters tomorrow. I'm proud of you. If you got a streak going, don't break it. If you don't have a streak going, all you got to do is 2 days in a row and then don't stop. So I'll see you right here tomorrow. I love you so much. Till next time. Peace.
Thank you so much for joining me on the Bible Department podcast. If this episode was helpful, it would mean the world to me if you'd give us a follow, rate and review the show, and don't forget to share. You can learn more about the show at thebibledepartment.com and find us on Instagram at The Bible Department. If you want to dive deeper into the Bible, you can get free access to our library of courses at thebibledepartment.com. We'll see you back here tomorrow. What if I told you that what you're learning in this video was just the tip of the iceberg? The Bible Department is actually powered by Arma. What is Arma? I'm so glad you asked. Arma is an online subscription-based platform that we designed to help people, everyday people, learn the Bible for themselves. We started Arma so that anybody, anywhere, could have access to trustworthy and entertaining Bible and theology content. In addition to this podcast, we have over 60 courses on individual books of the Bible, on theology topics, and on some hot topics like homosexuality, tithing, and women in ministry. But really, Arma is a community of people that I've gotten to know, a community where thousands of people are currently finding family, asking questions, and nerding out on the Bible together. If you want a community to read the Bible with you this year, or if you want to dive into some deeper theological content, or if you want more exclusive access to me and the entire Arma team, how about you go to thebibledepartment.com? I'll be sure to post the link in the description of this video. Let's make this your year to become a Bible nerd.